What happens in our kiddos when we shift our attention to and from devices during our interactions with them? What is the impact on our kiddos when parents are sort of paying attention? Join today for the answers to these two questions and many more beautiful insights from Kathy Bowers, our guest today on The Language of Play.
Does your child have a speech-language delay and you really want them to talk? Do difficult behaviors derail home life and you know the frustration is a communication struggle? Does your child see a speech therapist and you wonder, what do they do and how can I help? If these or similar questions are in your mind, this podcast is for you. Hello, my name is Dina Lynn Rosenbusch. I am a speech-language pathologist that has worked with children from birth to 21 for 3 decades. And in my classrooms, I see you wanting to connect with the heart of your child, but their speech and language skills create a barrier. So if you have a kiddo that has difficult behaviors, needs to expand their language or learn to say speech sounds, and maybe even receives speech therapy, stay tuned, because in this podcast, you will learn how to use your daily life as a tool to communication practice and how to do that practice. You will become confident knowing you are making the difference you want to make. And you will hear success stories of parents who have navigated these struggles already. We'll do this all while focusing on building deep, meaningful connection and confidence in your kiddo. So grab a cup of coffee along with a notebook and pen. It's time to speak in the way your child's brain understands. And that is the language of play. Welcome back to the language of play. We are in the next of guest episodes this month of March, where we have a guest every single episode this month. And today you are going to get so much inspiration and a wealth of information from our guest once again. I have had so much fun, I need to admit it, having these interviews, and I believe you're going to love it too. So I'm glad you're here to share it. And as always, I appreciate your reviews. If you have not left a review yet, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave that written review. I appreciate and read every single one. In addition, check the show notes for links for a free 21 days of encouragement or to sign up for the Language of Play newsletter. Email me with any questions or comments because I just love to hear from you. And the email, of course, is hello@thelanguageofplay.com. Now let's get started with our guest interview. Today, I have Kathy Bowers with me. She is a parenting and life coach, and for 40 years, she has been supporting parents to find better ways to communicate and overcome parenting difficulties. Life change coaching is where Kathy supports parents through individual coaching sessions to find their own solutions to communication and parenting problems. Harmony and balance is restored in the family home, and everyone is happier. Now that does sound like a perfect match for the language of play. Kathy Bowers, thank you so much for being here with me today to talk about what it is you do and how it is that you got into this. How did you get into coaching?
Hi, thank you for inviting me on. Well, as you can hear, I've got a British accent, so I'm from the UK.
So I love that accent. Listeners know that I just love accents. It's so fun.
Yes, I got into coaching. I've been working from the age of 16 with families and parents through all sorts of different places, schools, nurseries, day and live-in nannying, children's homes, and private and day nurseries and state nurseries. And over the years, I kept on thinking, well, what else do I need to do? So then I got into social care, helping the high end and also the low end families with parenting. And that meant going directly in their homes. And that was for 20 years. And during that time, 2018, I decided to train as a performance coach. And I that knowledge into my families, because up to that point, they were looking for me to give them all the answers. And it wasn't really working, because it's like anything. If you agree with something, you'll do it. But if you don't, you won't. So they were sort of sitting back, not taking full responsibility of their issues that they had, which was worrying because their children were being removed from their care unless they made changes. Oh, so I came in and I said, right, we're doing it differently. Now you have full responsibility. I will help you. I will support you. I'll ask the questions, but the changes have to come from you. And depending on what you give, it'll either work or it won't. So 70%, I'm pleased to say, made that change. So they kept their children at home. We put in extra support as well to continue that support with them. But I've become very disillusioned over the, I suppose, the last 6 years out of my 20, because whereas when I first started, I worked independently with families, and depending on what their criteria was, I might be a year with them, 6 months, 3 months, or whatever. But now I was told, no, it's only 6 weeks you give to each family and then you're out. And I thought, well, how does that work? Because no one's going to tell you their history, especially if they've been, you know, really sort of traumatic problems and they've had so many social workers. So how can they trust me? So they said, well, some families will have 3 extra weeks. I thought, well, that's not going to give them much help.
No.
So I just thought, you know what? I'm taking my coaching out and I'll start up my business. But then we had COVID and all sorts of things happen. And then I wasn't very IT, so I had to tweak my website and everything. So I've now got that sort of up and going now. But what was nice was, rather than having all the trauma, I now work with parents who know what they want, have tried things, but they're still stuck and they think, oh, what else can I do? So, and now they engage with me and they take full responsibility of what they do. So with my online coaching and the packages I offer, the more they do, the more they put in, the more they, you know, will exceed their goals and find the solutions. So I just feel it's taken me from the age of 16 to where I am now to finally find, I found my vocation. And this is where I should have been, but I obviously needed all the knowledge and the experience that I've collected over the years to get where I am now to help people.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. That's quite a journey. It sounds to me like you have been what we would call in the United States, the social work realm. And then you use three terms that I don't think use the same way as you do. One of those is nurseries. And when you say nurseries, in my country, I would think of like birth to three, but I think you mean it differently, don't you?
Yes, the nurseries, well, you've got private nurseries and state nurseries. So they come up to sort of coming up to school age, but the private nurseries will get them up to just the beginning of school age, and you're still doing work with them, preparing them to get into the school.
Okay, so we would call that, I think, a daycare center.
Oh, right.
The age of 5 or 6, or maybe we'd say kindergarten.
Yes.
Or first grade. Yeah. Okay.
It's and similar. Then you
mentioned,
yeah.
I'm just checking semantics here because, you know, in Britain, you say a few things differently. So just to make sure that we're clear, you also use the word high end and low end. Are you referring to income brackets?
No, the low end parenting I started off years ago, which was brilliant because they were stuck with a problem. Like they might wanted to know how to introduce solids to feeding a baby. So they're very short, or how to get your children to do the homework. So there were short pieces of work. And I did that with the families. They sorted themselves out and we never heard from them. But social care was watching us and they thought, oh, we could use this team. They're handy. Yeah. So they took us on for the high end entrenched families that were repeating the same mistakes, but with another set of children. Their other children had already been taken away, but they were still repeating it. And they thought, we can't go in every week, but my service could. So we could be the ears, the eyes. We'd give all the reports, the documentation of what's going on. And the social worker would then use all our evidence based for their court reports. So we were doing their work for them, but not getting paid for it, basically.
So. So I would interpret high end and low end would be like a short term client. Is a quick fix kind of client. We just needed to learn a few things and then let go. And then it would be a long-term client, would be somebody that has come from trauma. They've got things to overcome. They've got a lot more needs. And that would be what you refer to as high-end. Okay. I'm really glad to clarify that because those terminologies, we don't use the same way. And I hear you when it comes to IT stuff. That's been a road for me too. So good for you having all this experience and being in this role because it's so important for our families. We know that parents really, really do want to do well by kiddos.
And yet there's so much to learn. None of us come at it knowing the handbook. So I'm really, really glad you're doing it. Now, you have talked a lot about child-centered language. Yes. And when you talk about child-centered language, tell me what you mean by it.
It's making sure that you take the age of your child and the ability of your child into consideration when you're speaking to them. When, you know, from a baby, you're just very simply, they're hearing your voice, they're hearing your words, they're looking at you, you're playing with a toy and describing the toy and maybe the color or the sound. So you take it very gradually. And then with the toddler, you're doing the same thing. So you make sure it's age appropriate for the child. You don't start giving them adult conversation to the child because they think, what's this? You know, I mean, unfortunately, lots of parents do speak to their children like they're adults when they're not, and they're just children, you know, just learning. So you make sure that if you're giving them an instruction, it's simple, it's age appropriate, and you explain, obviously, why you're doing it to them as well. But you won't say to them three or four things in a sentence that you want them to do because they freeze and they just think, well, I don't know which one is the one you want me to do first. And that's when the adults get very irritable and they shout and say, haven't you done that yet? But they don't realize they've given too much and it's just overloaded their brain. They're just thinking, what's happening here? Right. And if we were given the same information, we'd be the same thing. We'd think, well, how do we, we think, oh, we'll have to prioritize this. And we're still sort of thinking it over. We can't immediately jump through a hoop, but we seem to think our children can. We forget that they need to hear what they're saying, process it, and then act on it. And it takes time. It's not an instant click your fingers and get on with it.
Right. That is one of the things that I have frequently said. I think that the number one problem that I see with parents in communicating with kids is that the parents think that the child thinks the way the adult thinks. So when they speak to them as if they understand equally. You know, and I know that that is so wrong. I think children learn to tune out and to check out when the language is too far above them. And that does certainly cause not good listening, and it causes emotional rift.
And it's also your body language and the tone of voice you're giving. And if you're being very abrasive with your tone of voice, no one wants to listen to that. So you will blanket. You think, "Way, keep out of this. Don't give eye contact, or, you know, just try and hope this person will disappear and leave me alone."
Right. Now, one of the other things that you are really astute in talking about is what happens to our kiddos when we're using devices. Devices interfere so much. And that is obviously a new thing. Since you and I were children, there wasn't the device problem that there is now. So what happens to our kiddos when we are shifting our attention from our devices to the children and back to our devices?
Well, what happens now is that everyone seems to be involved in this technology. We have our phones, have our iPhones, our tablets, our computers, our laptops, everything's there. But we're giving the phone to young children, to sort of toddlers, to keep them amused. Watch this children's song or whatever it is, keep them amused. And they're getting addicted to it as well. They're expecting it. And some of them are putting it in front of them when they're feeding the children as well. They're not even thinking, let's put it down, let's give eye contact, let me encourage them to feed or whatever. So it's all the same things. And the children, I mean, you've got little ones going off to infant school now with a phone. Why do they need a mobile? They can't use it in school. And they don't have the social skills to phone up. I mean, they know how to press the buttons and turn it on, but they haven't got the grammar to sort of really have full-scale conversations. And it's probably just mum or grandma or maybe a childminder picking your child up anyways. And if there's a problem, the school will contact whoever that is. And then you've got the older children who are permanently obsessed with it. I mean, their phone has to be on 24/7. They sit next to each other and they text each other when they're sitting next to each other rather than talking to each other. They stick it under their pillow at night and have it on. Then they complain they haven't had a good enough sleep because this thing's buzzing and making all sorts of noises. And the parents come back, everyone comes back from work, school, and we're all sort of just doing this all the time. So if anyone's paying it, you know, a little one wants your attention, might be on the floor playing with a toy, comes over to you, tries to get your attention, puts it in your lap, and you go, and you're still not really giving eye contact or bang, then they might bang you with it. And you automatically think, oh, why are you being aggressive? Why are you being naughty? No, they're just trying to get your attention to play with them. And it's the same. We don't sit round the table anymore. I don't know what's happened, and have meals, breakfast and all our meals together. Again, the meals come and the kids, the older ones, take the meal off into their bedroom. And everyone's just sort of all sort of, it's like being strangers in the house. Everyone's doing their own thing. And they've forgotten how to communicate, the art of conversation. And then they realize, well, why aren't we getting on? Well, because you're not spending time with each other. You're not getting to know one another. You're not getting to know your family's dislikes, your family's fears, how their days have gone. They don't know anything about mum and dad, really. And it's just one of these things. And it's got into such a bad habit where if we had the old phones, like I was telling you before, you couldn't take that out because you'd have this long cable and it'd have to be miles and miles long, you know, to go out and walk around. And nothing really happened. You know, if there was a problem, you could go into a shop or go to a police, say, phone up. So there's always some way to get contact if you need it. But this phone thing, it should be managed. It shouldn't be. I mean, they say now that even teenagers shouldn't be on it more than 2 hours a day maximum, and younger ones even less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard some pretty strict criteria with that too, where 2 hours a day on screens, not just the telephone or the mobile, it's screens. And yet our schools give them more than that, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad that you bring this up, because the activity that the phone has become in our life, we are dependent on it. We are addicted to it. We use it as a tool, but we also use it as a distraction. We use it for positive and it has negative. So it's like all of it is happening right now. So yeah, our phones have both this positive and negative part to it. And so the balance, I think, is a relatively new issue that we all need to learn how to navigate. And I'm glad that you're throwing that out there in the world. One of the things that we see a lot of in speech therapy is that the kids, the teens now, you know, they've grown up with the phone and they don't have basic conversation skills, basic communication skills. And mom and dad do, but they don't realize that they're not using it always with their children to teach their children. Because again, when we think that we can have the conversation, but I'm just quickly doing something on my phone, and then, you know, like our shifting attention feels different than what they're doing.
Yes,
but we're training
not listening to them.
Right, we're not listening.
And you're not doing the eye contact. You're not asking the questions. I mean, the gullibility of everyone, all the teenagers watching stuff on the internet, and they're taking it as, because I'm seeing it, it must be true. And we're always hearing about this fake news, and there's so much going on. But you might be watching a program, even with one of your parents, and you could be discussing it. It could be like a reality TV, God help us, but they've got so many of them on there. And parents should say, when they're seeing something, well, what do you think of what you're seeing here? Get them to question and look, you know, do you agree with that? But they don't have a conversation. Everyone just takes it in and just believes it. And they're learning. It's like learning everything through that. So they're learning about relationships, how they talk, and the body image. I mean, that we know that's doing so much damage, because they think these guys should be all sort of muscular. So the guys who haven't got that physique think, oh, well, I need to be like that. And then the girls are looking at these girls with all the makeup, the lipstick, the pouting, the false boobs, and think, well, maybe that's what I need to be. And they're not actually thinking, how do I develop my confidence? How do I develop me that's worth knowing? And all these people that have had all these things done, the body images, you hear them, they've got all these things going on, but they're not confident. Yeah. There's reasons why they've had it, and it hasn't been explored. They haven't dealt with that problem.
Right. Digging deep inside the personal self to figure out, why do I do what I do, and what do I say to myself about myself?
Exactly. And beauty, I mean, beauty isn't just on the skin. That's not the beauty. It's the inner person. It's who you are as a complete person. What have you got? And everybody's got beauty and inner gifts that they can give to each other. They can bring out and they can shine. But if you're just thinking about this image here, that's going to fade. But what else have you got afterwards? I mean, you see these young guys and the girls, and they're all doing all this sort of flashing and cuddling up and all this. And you think, what are you talking about? There's no conversation going on. You're all posing. You know, the guy wants to get up how many numbers up in the, you know, in his Facebooks and his Instagram. How many clicks have I got? And she's doing the same thing. And you just think, there's something going really wrong here. We're not actually seeing the person.
Right, right. I've seen also where it's popular to take a picture of the top half of your head from a camera that is lower than you. So you have the ceiling and the top half of your head, and then you send that. And there's no conversation. And I don't know what that means. I don't know. Anyway, let's go back to this attention giving topic where we as adults are giving our attention sort of to our kiddos. So when we're on our devices, we're lacking our full attention with our kids. But what is the impact on our children? So we've already talked about from the parent's perspective, but let's really talk about what happens inside the child when they're only kind of getting attention that they need.
Well, one of the first ones is when you're babies, when you're young toddlers, because you come up and you want mum and dad to play. And lots of parents, they think, oh, my child's enjoying the toys we've given him. I can see that he or she is enjoying them. And they don't actually realize that what they should be doing is getting on the ground with them, on the floor with them, playing with them, encouraging them. They can't do it all the time, but it's good to be involved with your child's play and your activities. And if this child, like I'm saying, comes up, gets your attention and you don't respond, you're on the phone, and then you do it again and then you get cross, the child will either do two things. If they're not getting anything from you, they'll withdraw and they might start self-soothing and self-doing things for themselves. And then you won't notice. You'll just say, oh, he's so good or she's so good. Look, they can play by themselves. You haven't seen the damage that's been done, that the reason they're doing this is because you haven't been giving them any attention. I mean, they've done lots of things with mums. We did one, which was with mums who pretended to be, right, you had mental health, because that really impacts and you can't help it. You need to help have yourself supported and helped through your mental health difficulties or your postnatal depression. But they did a thing. They took ordinary mums who didn't have any problems. They said, right, bring the babies in. Now, we don't want you, when you come in, to look at them, to smile at them, to do anything, just pop them down and just go about doing your own thing and leave them doing what they need to do, but just don't engage. And the mum said, oh, I can't do that. No, we have to do this because we're doing a study. So they did this for a couple of weeks and they were watching the babies, and they soon learned that the babies stopped making the noises, stopped trying to smile, stopped trying to get attention. They were just really withdrawing. And then they said, right, now this time we've done all the filming of this. Now I want you to come in and just to automatically respond, pick them up, kiss, nurture them. And you automatically saw this sort of light bulb come on. Boom! You know, the child really needed this. So that was vital for them to do that. And it's just that sort of response. And then you do it with the older children as well. And if you're only responding when they've got your attention through doing something annoying or naughty, as you might call it, breaking something, hitting your other sibling, doing whatever you don't want them to do, and you respond, they will learn, oh, well, when I'm normal and behaving well, I don't get any response, so I might as well just do this. So you're encouraging the bad behavior and you're rewarding the bad behavior. And then as it gets older, you know, and it goes on, it's chaos. And you just think, how have I got to this point? And what do I need to do to stop this and get back to what I want the household to be like?
Right. Right. Yeah, I see that too. It's very insidious because we don't see it coming. We think it's small. It's a one-time thing. And then it becomes a habit. And then the habit is what really teaches our children what is true about themselves, at least what they take in to think about themselves. And then they react and, like you said, withdraw, self-soothe, all of those things.
Yeah. And also they're learning from their parents all the time and their relationships. You know, they sit there and they take it all in, and you don't realize they're watching you. You're basically, our parents are under a microscope with children, because they're just thinking, let's watch, let's. And if you're having arguments, or if, you know, you're not getting on and your language isn't particularly nice and your body language is wrong for your one another, they pick it all up and they get the habits. And then what happens is eventually you might notice your child has a mannerism that you have been doing, and you just think, "Whoa, where's that come from?" And it's really, really strange. And it's the same thing with if you're having arguments and things in your child. I mean, the common thing is, my families used to say, they don't hear it. They're in the next room. They're in the bedroom asleep. Well, I'm sorry, you might have been asleep, but if you hear arguments and thumps and going on, it's going to wake you up, because the walls aren't thick, you know, between that living room and a bedroom. And what's more awkward for the child is their imagination's just developing, and because they can't see what's going on, it could develop much more sort of anxiety, because they're going over the top with what's going on next door. Then they come down in the morning and they're still sort of worried because they've heard all this noise going on. And there's mum and dad, who probably argue but get on well. So they're just talking normally. And to that child, it's like, I don't understand what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. How can we jump from one world into the next world, yeah, and there's no communication about what had happened? No. Right. All right. So, you know, you mentioned, so in a different way, that we often teach our children something we never intended to teach them.
Yes.
It ends up being that way. So now let's say we've got the parent that is in this situation where they have taught what they never meant to teach. What would you say that they could do as one small thing? Because I always like to give parents something that they can grab onto, they can do right now, they can do today. One small thing, what would you recommend that parents
do? To stop repeating that pattern. And you've got to speak, if you've got your child that understands, is at the age to understand, tell them, say, I've been doing something that I shouldn't have been doing, and I'm sorry about this. Explain that this isn't the right way. And you have to demonstrate how to model your behaviors, how to handle your emotions in a different way. And the parents, you know, the children will learn to trust you. It'll take a while because they're used to your bad habits. But the only way you can do it is break that bad habit yourself. And at first they'll look and think, well, what's going on here? She's not shouting or stomping or swearing or whatever, and is much calmer. And they'll be a bit wary at first because they think, oh, it's going to change. But after a while, they realize, no, it's got better. And you engage more with your children and you show the positive sides and you praise and you look for something each day that they're doing well. It can be really tiny and just say, I've noticed you've really been trying to do this. Well done. And tell them that you're there for them. Show them that you care. Show them that they're the most important thing. Your whole world centers around them. They come before any other relationship, your child.
Thank you so much for your input, Kathy, and what it is that you have poured into our parents. I know that a lot of parents are saying, wow, I hadn't thought about the impact of my device use on my child. Or, wow, I hadn't thought about what I'm actually teaching. So thank you so much for making our parents aware and sharing your expertise. And coming from all the way over the Atlantic from the UK to join us. Any final thought you wanted to leave with the audience as far as contacting you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, contact me on my website, which is life-change-coaching.co.uk, and click in there and book a free exploratory session just to tell me more and see how I can help you, find out more about how I do my coaching sessions with parents. And, you know, I just want to help people, really help parents. And I wish I'd had it when I was a parent, but obviously it's just one of those things you learn, isn't it?
Right. Me too. Well, thank you for being that resource. And those links will be in the show notes.
It was a great pleasure. And I hope I've been helpful to parents.
Oh, you absolutely have been. And I very much appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Hey parents, I hope you found this episode helpful. If so, would you please take 30 seconds and share it with a friend who also lives or works with children? I would really appreciate it if you would leave a quick review for the show on Apple Podcasts. I read every review and it lights me up to know that this show is making a difference. Then come join my Facebook community, where you'll meet other parents who are dedicated to helping their children grow too. You'll find the link in the show notes. Thank you for joining me. Now it's time to go. Let's pop our kiddos in the strollers and go look around outdoors and see what we have to talk about.